was not in a mood to be fair. Even if she'd had a choice, she wouldn't have gone. Not without Peony. Audrey fixed a cold glare on her, lips pulled taut. "The coronation is starting," she said. "Go wash the hover. I want it to look brand new." Glad she wouldn't be forced to sit through the coronation with them, Cinder made no argument as she grabbed her crutches and headed back for the door. One more evening. She turned on her netlink as soon as she reached the elevators, delegating the coronation proceedings to a corner of her vision. It was still the pre-ceremony. A parade of government officials was marching into the palace, swarmed by a sea of journalists and cameras. She picked up a bucket and soap in the storage room before hobbling toward the parking garage, half listening as the newscaster explained the symbolism behind different elements of the coronation. The embroidery on Kai's robe, the designs in the crest that would be raised when he took his vows, the number of times the gong would be struck when he ascended to the dais, all practices that had been around for centuries, cobbled together from the many cultures that had come together to form the Commonwealth. The news continuously switched between the festival and the city center to the occasional shot of Kai during his preparations. Only these latter bits snagged Cinder's attention away from the bucket of sudsy water. She couldn't help imagining she was in the palace with him, rather than this dim, cool garage. Kai shaking hands with some unknown delegate. Kai greeting the crowd. Kai trying to steal a private conversation with his advisor. Kai turning toward her, smiling at her, glad she was by his side. The momentary glimpses of him made Cinder's heart feel soothed, rather than injured. It was a reminder that much bigger things were happening in the world, and Cinder's yearning for freedom, and Pearl's taunts and Audrey's whims, and even Kai's flirting with her did not fit into that bigger picture. The Eastern Commonwealth was crowning its new emperor. Today, the whole world was watching. Kai's clothing blended old and new traditions. Turtle doves embroidered across his mandarin collar signified peace and love. Draped over his shoulders was a midnight blue cloak embroidered with six silver stars, signifying the peace and unity of the six earthen kingdoms, and a dozen chrysanthemums, signifying the 12 provinces of the Commonwealth and how they would flourish under his reign. A royal advisor stood beside Kai on the platform. The first rows of the crowd were made up of government officials from every branch and province. But Cinder's eyes were always drawn back to Kai, magnetically latching onto him again and again. Then, a small entourage came down one of the aisles, the last to take their seats. Queen Lavanna, along with two thaumaturges. The queen was wearing a delicate white veil that draped to her elbows, hiding her face and making her look more like a phantom than a royal guest. Cinder shivered. She didn't think any Lunars had ever been present at a Commonwealth coronation. Rather than making her feel hopeful for the future, the sight filled Cinder with a lump of anxiety, because Lavanna's haughty stance suggested that she belonged there more than any of the earthen citizens, as if she were the one about to be coronated. The queen and her entourage claimed their reserved seats in the first row. Those seated around them tried, unsuccessfully, to hide their distaste at being so close to her. Cinder pulled the sopping rag from the bucket and put her apprehension to work, scrubbing Audrey's hover to a fine gleam. The coronation began with a thunder of drums. Prince Kai kneeled on a silk-covered platform as a slow parade of men and women passed before him, each dropping a ribbon or a medallion or jewel around his neck. Each was a symbolic gift: long life, wisdom, goodness of heart, generosity, patience, joy. When all of the necklaces had been placed on him, the camera zoomed in on Kai's face. He appeared surprisingly serene, his eyes lowered but his head held high. As was customary, a representative from one of the other five earthen kingdoms had been selected to officiate the coronation in order to show that the other countries would honor and respect the new sovereign's right to govern. They had selected European Federation's Prime Minister Bromstad, a tall, blonde man with broad shoulders. Cinder had always thought that he looked more like a farmer than a politician.
He held out an old-fashioned paper scroll that contained all the promises Kai was making to his people when he accepted the role of emperor. As both of the prime minister's hands gripped either end of the scroll, he spoke a series of vows, and Kai repeated after him. I solemnly swear to govern the peoples of the Eastern Commonwealth according to the laws and customs as laid down by generations of past rulers, he recited. I will use all the power bestowed on me to further justice, to be merciful, to honor the inherent rights of all peoples, to respect the peace between all nations, to rule with kindness and patience, and to seek the wisdom and counsel of my peers and brethren. All this I promise to do today and for all the days of my reign, before all the witnesses of the earth and heavens. Cinder's heart swelled as she scrubbed the hood. She had never seen Kai look so serious or so handsome. She feared for him a bit, knowing how nervous he must be. But in that moment, he was not the prince who had brought a broken android to the market or almost kissed her in an elevator. He was her emperor. Prime Minister Bromstad lifted his chin. I hereby proclaim you Emperor Kaito of the Eastern Commonwealth. Long live his Imperial Majesty. The crowd burst into cheers and animated chants of Long live the Emperor as Kai turned to face his people. If he were happy at his raised position, it was impossible to tell. His lips were neutral, his gaze reserved as he stood on the dais and the applause of the crowd surged around him. After a long moment of his own serenity clashing with the tornado of praise, a podium was brought to the stage for the emperor's first address. The crowd quieted. Cinder dashed water over the vehicle. Kai stood expressionless for a moment, staring at the edge of the platform, his fingers gripping the podium sides. I am honored, he began, that my coronation coincides with our most revered holiday. 126 years ago, the nightmare and catastrophe that was the Fourth World War ended, and the Eastern Commonwealth was born. It grew out of the unification of many peoples, many cultures, many ideals. It was strengthened by a single enduring belief that together we as one people are strong. We have the ability to love each other, no matter our differences. To help each other, no matter our weaknesses. We chose peace over war. Life over death. We chose to crown one man to be our sovereign, to guide us, to uphold us. Not to rule, but to serve, he paused. Cinder pulled her focus away from the retina display, long enough to give the hover a quick inspection. It was too dark to tell if she'd done a decent job, but she had lost interest in perfection. Content, she dropped the wet rag into the bucket and sank against the concrete wall behind the row of parked hovers, giving the tiny screen her full attention. I am the great-great-great-grandson of the first emperor of the Commonwealth, Kai continued. Since his time, our world has changed. We continue to face new problems, new heartaches. Though a war between men has not been fought on earthen soil in 126 years, we now fight a new battle. My father was fighting a war against Letimosis, the pestilence that has ravaged our planet for over a dozen years. This disease has brought death and suffering to our doorstep. The good people of the Commonwealth, and all our earthen siblings, have lost friends, family, loved ones, neighbors. And with these losses, we face loss of trade and commerce, a downturn of economy, worsened living conditions. Some have gone without food because there are not enough farmers to toil the land. Some have gone without heat as our energy supplies dwindle. This is the war we now face. This is the war my father was determined to end. And I now vow to take up that torch. Together, we will find a cure for this disease. We will defeat it, and we will return our great country to its former splendor. The audience applauded, but Kai showed no sign of joy at his words.
His expression was resigned. Dark.
It would be naive of me, he said when the audience had quieted, not to mention a second kind of conflict, one no less deadly.
The crowd rustled. Cinder leaned her head back against the cold wall.
As I am sure you are all aware, the relationship between the allied earthen nations and Luna has been strained for many generations. As I am sure you are also aware, the Sovereign of Luna, Her Majesty Queen Levana, has honored us with her presence for the past week. She is the first Lunar Sovereign to step foot on Earth for almost a century, and her presence indicates hope that a time of true peace between us is fast approaching.
The screen panned out, showing Queen Levana in the front row. Her milky hands were folded demurely in her lap, as if she were humbled by the recognition. Cinder was sure she fooled no one.
My father spent the last years of his life in discussion with Her Majesty, in hopes of seeing an alliance to fruition. He did not live to see the result of those discussions, but I am determined that his efforts will live on in me. It is true that there have been obstacles on this road to peace, that we have had difficulties finding a common ground with Luna, a solution that would serve both parties. But I have not given up hope that a resolution can be found.
He took a breath, then paused with his lips still parted. His gaze dropped down to the podium, his fingers locked around the edges.
Cinder leaned forward as if she could get a closer look at the prince as he struggled with his next words.
I will... He paused again, straightened, and focused his eyes on some distant, invisible point.
I will do whatever needs to be done to ensure the well-being of my country. I will do whatever needs to be done to keep you all safe. That is my promise.
He peeled his hands from the podium and walked off before the crowd could think to applaud, leaving a sprinkle of concerned but polite clapping behind him. Cinder's heart strangled her as the screen allowed another glimpse of the Lunars in the front row. The veil may have hidden the queen's conceit, but the smug grins on her two attendants could not be mistaken. They believed they had won.
Chapter 32. Cinder waited half an hour before limping back to the elevator. The apartment building had come to life again. She kept herself plastered to the wall, crutches tucked behind her, as neighbors danced by in their fine clothes. A few pitying glances turned on Cinder as she kept out of their way, careful not to smudge any of the beautiful dresses, but mostly her neighbors ignored her. Making it to the apartment, she shut the door behind her and listened for a moment to the blissful emptiness of the living room. She ran a mental checklist of everything she wanted to grab, green text scrolling across her vision. In her room, Cinder spread out her blanket and filled it with her few belongings, oil-stained clothes, tools that had never made their way back to the toolbox, silly little gifts that Aiko had given to her over the years, like a gold ring that was actually a rusted washer. Both Aiko's personality chip and Peony's ID chip were tucked safely in her calf compartment, where they would stay until she found a more permanent home for them. She shut her eyes, suddenly tired. How was it that with freedom so close on the horizon, she suddenly had the overwhelming desire to lie down and take a nap? All those long nights fixing the car were catching up with her. Shaking off the feeling, she finished packing as fast as she could, trying her best not to think of the risks she was taking. She would be considered a runaway cyborg for real this time. If she were ever caught, Audrey could have her imprisoned. She kept her hands moving, trying not to think of Aiko, who should have been at her side, or Peony, who should have made her want to stay, or Prince Kai, Emperor Kai. She would never see him again. She knotted the blanket corners with an angry tug. She was thinking too much. She just had to leave, one step at a time, and soon she would be in the car, and all this would be behind her. Settling the makeshift bag over her shoulder, she hobbled her way back to the hall and down to the labyrinth of underground storage spaces. Limping into the storage room, she dropped the bag onto the floor. She paused for only a moment to catch her breath before she continued, unlatching the top of the handheld toolbox and shoveling everything off the desk into it. There would be time for sorting later. The standing toolbox that came nearly to her chest was much too big to fit into the car and would have to be left behind. Her gas mileage would have been ruined with all that weight in the back anyway. She surveyed the room where she'd spent most of the past 5 years. It was the closest thing to a home she'd ever known, even with the chicken wire that felt like a cage and the boxes that smelled of mildew. She didn't expect to miss it much. Peony's crumpled ball gown was still draped over the welder. It, like the toolbox, wouldn't be coming with her. She moved to the towering steel shelves against the far wall and began rummaging for parts that would be useful for the car, or even her own body should anything malfunction, throwing the pieces of miscellaneous junk into a heap on the floor. She paused as her hand stumbled across something she'd never thought she would see again. The small, battered foot of an 11-year-old cyborg. She lifted it from the shelf, where it had been tucked out of sight. Iko must have saved it, even after Cinder had asked her to throw it away. Perhaps, in Iko's mind, it was the closest thing to an android shoe she would ever own. Cinder cradled the foot against her heart. How she had hated this foot. How overjoyed she was to see it now. With an ironic smile, she slumped into her desk chair for the last time. Pulling off her gloves, she eyed her left wrist, trying to picture the small chip just beneath the surface. The thought brought Peony to mind, her blue-tipped fingers, the scalpel against her pale white skin. Cinder shut her eyes, forcing the memory away. She had to do this. She reached for the utility knife on the corner of her desk, the blade soaking in a tin can filled with alcohol. She shook it off, took a deep breath, and rested her cyborg hand palm up on the desk. She recalled seeing the chip on Dr. Erlon's holograph, less than an inch away from where skin met metal. The challenge would be getting it out without accidentally splicing any important wires. Forcing her mind to quiet, her hand to still, she pressed the blade into her wrist. The pain bit into her, but she didn't flinch. Steady. Steady. A beep startled her. Cinder jumped, pulling the blade away and spinning around to face the wall of shelving. Her heart pummeled against her ribs as she scanned all the parts and tools that would be left behind. It beeped again. Cinder's eyes dropped to the old net screen that was still propped against the shelves. She knew it was disconnected from the net, and yet a bright blue square was flashing in the corner. Another beep. Setting down the knife, Cinder slinked away from her chair and kneeled before the screen. On the blue square was scrawled, "Direct link request received from unknown user. Accept." Tilting her head, she spotted the DCOM chip still inserted in the screen's drive. The small green light beside it glowed. In the shadow of the screen, it looked like any other chip, but Cinder remembered Kai's response when she'd described the chip's shimmery silver material. A lunar chip. She grabbed a dirty rag from the pile of junk and pressed it against the barely bleeding wound. Screen, accept, link. The beeping stopped. The blue box disappeared. A spiral turned over on the screen. "Hello?" Cinder jumped. "Hello, hello, hello, is anybody there?" Whoever she was, she sounded on the verge of a breakdown. "Please, oh please, someone answer. Where is that stupid android? Hello?"
"Hello?"
Cinder leaned in toward the screen. The girl gasped, followed by a short silence. "Hello? Can you hear me? Is somebody—"
"Yes, I can hear you. Hold on, something's wrong with the vid cable."
"Oh, thank heavens," the voice said as Cinder set aside the rag. She set the screen face down on the concrete and opened the door to its control panel. "I thought maybe the chip had gotten damaged, or I'd programmed it with the wrong connection ID or something. Are you in the palace now?" Cinder found the vid cable disconnected from its plug. It must have come loose when Audrey had knocked it off the wall. Cinder screwed it in, and a flood of blue light splattered across the floor. "There we are," she said, righting the screen. She jolted back when she saw the girl on the other side of the connection. She must have been close to Cinder's age and had the longest, waviest, most unruly mess of tangled blonde hair imaginable. The golden nest around her head was tied in a big knot over one shoulder and cascaded in a jumble of braids and snarls, wrapping around one of the girl's arms before descending out of the screen's view. The girl was fidgeting with the ends, fervently winding and unwinding them around her fingers. If it weren't for the mess of hair, she would have been pretty. She had a sweet, heart-shaped face, giant sky blue eyes, and a sprinkle of freckles across her nose. She was somehow not at all what Cinder had been expecting. The girl looked equally surprised at seeing Cinder and her cyborg hand and dreary t-shirt.
"Who are you?" the girl asked.
Her eyes darted behind Cinder, taking in the dim lighting and the chicken wire.
"Why aren't you at the palace?"
"I wasn't allowed to go," Cinder answered. She squinted at the room behind the girl, wondering if she were looking at a home on the moon. But it did not look like any home at all. Rather, the girl was surrounded by metal walls and machines and screens and computers and more controls and buttons and lights than a cargo ship's cockpit. Cinder folded her legs, letting her footless calf dangle more comfortably over her thigh.
"Are you Lunar?"
The girl's eyes fluttered, as if caught off guard by the question. Instead of answering, she leaned forward.
"I need to speak with someone at New Beijing Palace right away."
"Then why don't you calm the palace information board?"
"I can't!"
The girl's shriek was so unexpected, so desperate, that Cinder nearly fell over.
"I don't have a global comm chip. This is the only direct link I've been able to get down to Earth."
"So you are Lunar." The girl's eyes widened to near-perfect circles.
"That's not...
Who are you?" said Cinder, her voice raising. "Are you working for the Queen? Are you the one who installed the chip in that android?
You are, aren't you?"
The girl's eyebrows drew together, but rather than looking irritated at Cinder's questions, she appeared frightened, even ashamed. Cinder clenched her jaw against the onslaught of questions and took in a slow breath before asking steadily,
"Are you a Lunar spy?"
"No, of course not. I mean, well, sort of."
"Sort of? What do you mean? Please listen to me."
The girl clenched her hands together, as if fighting an internal battle.
"Yes, I programmed the chip, and I am working for the Queen, but it's not what you think. I've programmed all the spyware that Levana used to watch Emperor Ryken these past months. But I didn't have a choice. Mistress would kill me if... Stars above, she will kill me when she finds out about this."
"Mistress who? You mean Queen Levana?" The girl squeezed her eyes tight, her face contorted with pain. When she opened her eyes again, they were glistening.
"No, Mistress Sybil. She is Her Majesty's head thaumaturge, and my guardian."
Recognition pinged in Cinder's head. Kai had suspected the Queen's thaumaturge of putting the chip in Nancy in the first place.
"But she's more like a captor, really," the girl continued. "I'm nothing to her but a prisoner and a slave."
She hiccuped on the last word and buried her face in a bundle of hair, sobbing.
"I'm sorry. I'm so sorry. I'm an evil, worthless, wretched girl."
Cinder felt her heart tug in sympathy. She could relate to being a slave for her guardian, but she couldn't recall ever being afraid that Audrey might actually kill her. Well, other than that time she sold her off for plague research. She clenched her jaw against the mounting pity, reminding herself that this girl was Lunar. She had helped Queen Levana spy on Emperor Ryken, and on Kai. She briefly wondered if the girl was only manipulating her emotions now, before she remembered that Lunars couldn't control people through the net screens. Blowing her hair out of her face, Cinder leaned forward and yelled,
"Stop it! Stop crying!"
The crying stopped. The girl peered up at her with big, watery eyes. "Why were you trying to get a hold of the palace?" The girl shrank back and sobbed, but the tears seemed to have been startled out of her.
"I need to get a message to Emperor Kai. I need to warn him. He's in danger. All of Earth. Queen Levana. And it's all my fault. If I'd only been stronger, if I'd only tried to fight, this wouldn't have happened. It's all my fault."
"Stars above, would you stop crying?" said Cinder before the girl could dissolve into hysterics again.
You need to get a hold of yourself. What do you mean Kai's in danger? What have you done?
The girl hugged herself, her eyes pleading with Cinder, as if she alone could offer forgiveness.
I'm the Queen's programmer. Like I said, I'm good at it, hacking into netlinks and security systems and the like.
She said this without a hint of arrogance on her wavering voice.
For the last few years, Mistress has been asking me to connect feeds from Earth's political leaders to Her Majesty's palace. At first, it was just court discussions, meetings, document transfers, nothing very interesting. Her Majesty wasn't learning anything that your Emperor hadn't already told her, so I didn't think much harm could come of it.
The girl twisted her hair around both sets of knuckles.
But then she asked me to program a DCOM chip that she could install in one of the royal androids, thinking then she could spy on the Emperor outside of the netlinks.
She raised her eyes to Cinder. Guilt was scrawled across her face.
If it had been any other android in the entire palace, she still wouldn't know anything. But now she does know, and it's all my fault.
She whimpered and pulled the lock of hair into her mouth like a gag.
Wait.
Cinder held up her hand, trying to slow the girl's rapid words. What exactly does Lavanna know? The girl pulled the hair out as tears started to slip down her cheeks.
She knows everything that android knew. Everything she'd been researching. She knows that Princess Selene is alive and that that Emperor Kai was searching for her. She knows that the Emperor wanted to find the princess and instate her as the true Lunar Queen.
Dread squirmed in Cinder's stomach.
She knows the names of the doctors who helped her escape, and this poor old woman in the European Federation who housed her for so long. Her Majesty's already sent people to hunt her down, using the information Kai had, and when they find her...
But what will she do to Kai? Cinder interrupted. Lavanna's already won. Kai all but said he was going to give her what she wants, so what does it matter now?
He tried to usurp her. You don't know the Queen. Her grudges. She'll never forgive this. I have to get a message to him, to somebody at the palace. He has to know it's a setup.
A setup? What kind of setup?
To become Empress. Once she's in control of the Commonwealth, she intends to use her army to wage war on the rest of Earth. And she can do it, too. Her army. This army.
She shuddered, ducking her head as if someone had swiped at her. Cinder shook her head.
Kai wouldn't allow it. It doesn't matter. Once she's Empress, she'll have no more use of him.
Blood rushed in Cinder's ears.
You think...
But she would be an idiot to try to kill him. Everyone would know it was her.
Lunars suspect she killed Queen Channery and Princess Selene, but what can they do about it? They might think of rebellion, but as soon as they're in her presence, she brainwashes them into compliance again.
Cinder rubbed her fingers over her brow.
He was going to announce it at the ball tonight, she murmured to herself. He's going to announce his intent to marry her.
Her heart was racing, thoughts spilling over in her brain. Lavanna knew he had been searching for Princess Selene. She would kill him. She would take over the Commonwealth. She would wage war on the whole planet. She grasped her head as the world spun around her. She had to warn him. She couldn't let him make the announcement. She could send him a comm, but what were the chances he was checking them during the ball?
The ball.
Cinder peered down at her drab clothes, her empty ankle.
Peony's dress.
The old foot that Aiko had saved. The silk gloves. Her head bobbed before she knew what she was agreeing to, and she used the shelves to pull herself to standing. I'll go, she muttered. I'll find him.
Take the chip, said the girl on the screen, in case we need to contact each other, and please, don't tell them about me, if my mistress ever found out.
Without waiting for her to finish, Cinder bent over and pulled the chip from its drive. The screen went black. Chapter 33. The silk dress felt like poison ivy sliding over Cinder's skin. She stared down at the bodice with its trim of delicate lace, the full skirt, the tiny seed pearls, and wanted to shrivel inside the gown and disappear. This was not her dress. She was a fake in it, an imposter. Oddly, The fact that it was wrinkled as an old man's face made her feel better. She snatched the old foot from the shelf, the small, rusted thing she'd woken up with after her operation, when she was a confused, unloved 11-year-old girl. She'd sworn to never put it on again, but at this moment, it might have been made of crystal for how precious it looked to her. Plus, it was small enough to fit in Pearl's boots. Cinder fell into her chair and whisked out a screwdriver. It was the most hurried fix she'd ever done, and the foot was even smaller and more uncomfortable than she'd remembered it. But soon, she was on 2 feet again. The silk gloves felt too fine, too delicate, too flimsy, and she worried she might snag them on some poorly placed screw. At least they, too, were covered in grease smudges, completing the affront. She was a walking disaster, and she knew it. She'd be lucky if they let her into the ball at all. But she would deal with that when she got there. The elevator was empty as she made her way to the parking garage. She rushed toward the abandoned car, the boots clipping awkwardly on the concrete floor as she tried not to trip on the too small foot and sprain her ankle. She could feel it precariously attached at the end of her leg. Not having had time to connect it to her wired nervous system, she felt like she was dragging around a paperweight. She tried to ignore it, thinking only of Kai and the announcement he was supposed to make that night. She reached the dark corner of the garage, already sweating from her exertion, and knowing it would only get worse once she got out into the city's relentless humidity. Before her, the car was sandwiched between two sleek, chrome-accented hovers. Its awful orange paint was dulled by the garage's flickering lights. It didn't belong. Cinder knew how it felt. She slipped into the driver's seat, and the smell of old garbage and mildew embraced her. At least she'd replaced the seat's stuffing and covered it in a scavenged blanket so she didn't have to worry about sitting on rat droppings. Still, she could only imagine what stains the car's frame and floorboards were leaving on Peony's dress. Shoving her thoughts to the back of her mind, she reached under the steering column and grasped the power supply and circuit wire she'd already stripped and wrapped. She fumbled for the brown ignition wire. Holding her breath, she tapped the wires together. Nothing happened. A drop of sweat rolled down the back of her knee. She flicked them together again. Again. Please, please, please. A spark lashed out from the wires, followed by unhappy clattering from the engine. Yes! She pressed her foot down on the accelerator, revving the engine, feeling the car thrum and rumble beneath her. Cinder allowed one overwhelming cry of relief, then jammed her foot into the clutch and pulled the transmission out of neutral, reciting the instructions she'd downloaded a week ago and had been studying ever since. How to drive. Maneuvering out of the garage proved the most difficult part. Once on the road, her way was guided by solar street lamps and the pale yellow glow from apartment windows. The city's constant light was a blessing, as the car's headlights had been busted out. Cinder was surprised at how rocky the roads were, how much garbage and debris littered the pavement since hovers no longer required an open path. The ride was jerky and harsh, and yet Cinder felt a surge of power with every turn of the wheel, press of the accelerator, rattle of the stick shift, screech of the rubber. A warm breeze blew through the missing back window, tussling Cinder's hair. The clouds had reached the city and hung threateningly above the skyscrapers, casting the evening in a gray shroud. Toward the other horizon, the sky was still wide open and proudly displaying the 9th full moon of the year. A perfect sphere in the blackened sky, a white, ominous eye transfixed upon her. Ignoring it, Cinder floored the accelerator, pushing the car to go faster, to fly. And it flew. Not smoothly or gracefully like a hover, but with all the roar and power of a proud beast. She couldn't help a grin, knowing that she had done this. She had brought this monstrosity back to life. It owed her now, and it seemed to know it. She would have made it, she thought, as the palace came into view, towering over the city atop its jagged cliff. She would have been nearing the city limits by now. Picking up speed, watching the lights blur past, racing for the horizon and never looking back. A splatter of rain hit the cracked windshield. Cinder gripped the steering wheel tighter as she started up the twisting, winding drive to the palace entrance. There were no hovers to compete with. She would be the last guest to arrive. She crested the hill, reveling in the rush of escape, of freedom, of power. And then the torrent began. Rain drenched the car, blurring the palace's lights. The sound pounded against the metal and glass. Without headlights, the world disappeared beyond the windshield. Cinder jammed her foot into the brake pedal. Nothing happened. Panic surged through her, and she desperately pumped the stiff brake. A shadow loomed against the storm. Cinder screamed and covered her face. The car collided with a cherry blossom tree, rocking Cinder with a jolt. Metal crunched around her. The engine sputtered and died. The seatbelt burned across her chest. Shaking, Cinder gaped at the storm that surged against the windshield. Wet, maroon-colored leaves fell from the overhead branches, sticking to the glass. She reminded herself to breathe as adrenaline coursed through her veins. Her control panel's recommended course of action: take slow, measured breaths. But the breaths choked her as much as the seatbelt did, until she reached a trembling hand toward the latch and peeled it off her. A leak revealed itself along the weather stripping of her door's window, dripping down onto her shoulder. Cinder fell back against the headrest, wondering if she had the strength to walk. Maybe if she just waited out the monsoon. Summer storms like this never lasted long. It would be a drizzle in a blink. She held up her sodden gloves and wondered what exactly she was waiting for. Not pride, not respectability. Being soaked could almost be an improvement at this point. Gasping for a full breath, she pulled at the door handle and kicked with her booted foot to force it open. She stepped out into a downpour, the rain cool and refreshing on her skin. Slamming the door shut, she turned to survey the damage, pushing her hair back off her forehead. The front end of the car was crumpled around the tree's trunk. The hood folded like an accordion to the passenger side fender. Her heart broke a little as she looked at the wreckage. All her hard work, destroyed so quickly. And, the thought occurring a second later, there was her chance for escape. Gone. Shivering in the rain, she shoved the thoughts aside. There would be other cars. Right now, she had to find Kai. Suddenly, the rain stopped pounding down on her. She glanced up at the umbrella overhead, then turned around. A greeter was staring at the car wreck with round eyes, his hands gripping the umbrella handle. "Oh, hi," she stammered. The man's disbelieving stare found its way to her. Her hair, her dress. He looked more repulsed by the second. Cinder snatched the umbrella from him and flashed a smile. "Thanks," she said, and dashed across the courtyard into the yawning double doors of the palace, dropping the umbrella at the stairs. Guards dressed in crimson uniforms lined the corridor, directing guests away from the elevator dock and toward the ballroom in the south wing, as if the clinking glasses and orchestral music weren't clear enough. The walk to the ballroom entrance was long and tedious. Cinder didn't know if the guards let their stoic gazes land on her as she passed by, wet boots squishing, and she dared not meet their eyes if they did. All her focus was busy being directed down her wiring into her lump of a foot. Be graceful. Be graceful. Be graceful. The music grew louder. The hall was ornamented with dozens of ornate stone statues, gods and goddesses long forgotten. Hidden cameras, disguised ID scanners. She felt a spark of paranoia, remembering that she still carried Peony's ID chip stashed away in her leg compartment. She imagined alarms blaring and lights flashing when they realized that she had two ID chips inside her, which would be suspicious if not outright illegal. But nothing happened. Emerging from the hallway, she found herself at the top of a grand staircase that cascaded into the ballroom. A row of guards and servants flanked the stairs, their faces as unreadable as those in the hall. The high ceiling had been hung with hundreds of crimson paper lanterns, each one glimmering with rich golden light. The far wall was lined with floor-to-ceiling windows that overlooked the gardens. Rain pummeled the glass, almost louder than the orchestra. The dance floor had been set up in the center, with round tables surrounding the space. Each table was bedecked with lavish orchid centerpieces and jade sculptures. The walls of the room were lined with folding silk screens hand-painted with designs of cranes and tortoises and bamboo, ancient symbols of longevity that hinted at a single defining message. Long live the Emperor. From her vantage point, she could see the entire room, thriving with vibrant silks and crinolines, rhinestones and ostrich plumes. She sought out Kai. He wasn't hard to find. Dancing. The crowd parted for him and his partner, the most beautiful, most graceful, most divine woman in the room, the Lunar Queen. Cinder couldn't stifle a gasp of bewilderment at the sight of her. Her stomach flipped, the momentary awe turning to revulsion. The queen held a poised smile, but Kai's expression was as unfeeling as stone as they waltzed across the marble floor. Cinder stepped back from the stairs before the queen noticed her. She scanned the crowd, convinced that Kai had not made his announcement yet, or the atmosphere in the room wouldn't be so jolly. Kai was fine. He was safe. All she had to do was find a way to speak with him, somewhere private, and tell him the queen's plans. Tell him the queen knew about his search for her niece. Then it would be up to him to put off accepting the queen's terms until... Well, Cinder knew nothing could put Queen Lavanna off forever without convincing her to start the war she'd been threatening for so long. But maybe, just maybe, Princess Selene could be found before that happened. Letting out a slow breath, Cinder stepped out of the massive doorway and ducked behind the nearest pillar, stumbling on her tiny foot. Gritting her teeth, she glanced around, but the nearby guards and servants remained as disinterested as a concrete wall. Cinder plastered herself against the column, trying to smooth back her hair so she could at least pretend to be fitting in. The music ceased, and the crowd began to applaud. She dared to peer down at the dance floor and saw Kai and Lavanna parting ways, he with a stiff bow and she with the grace of a geisha. As the orchestra started again, the entire ballroom joined in the dancing. Cinder followed the queen's glossy brunette curls heading toward a staircase on the other side of the room, the crowd parting eagerly before her. She scanned for Kai again and found him heading in the opposite direction, toward her. Holding her breath, she inched away from the protective column. This was her chance. If only he would look up and see her. If only he would come to her. She could tell him everything and then slip away into the night, and no one would ever have to know she'd been there at all. She bunched the silver gown up in her fists, her eyes boring holes into the Emperor's head, willing him to look up. Look up. Look up. Kai froze with a look of mild perplexity, and Cinder thought with a jolt that she'd succeeded. Had she just used her lunar gift? But then, she noticed a spot of gold beside Kai, a frilly sleeve brushing his arm. Her breath caught. It was Pearl, brushing her fingertips against Kai's elbow. She was full of dazzling smiles and fluttering lashes as she dipped into a curtsy. Stomach clenching, Cinder sank back against the pillar. Pearl started to talk, and Cinder monitored Kai's expressions as her pulse pounded in her ears. At first, he only attempted a weary smile, but soon there was confusion, surprise, an uncertain frown. She tried to guess what Pearl was saying. Yes, I am the girl from the festival this morning. No, Cinder is not coming. We wouldn't disrespect this momentous occasion by allowing my ugly cyborg stepsister to attend. Oh, didn't you know she's cyborg? Cinder shuddered, her eyes glued to the two of them. Pearl was going to tell Kai everything, and there was nothing she could do but watch and wait for the horrible moment when Kai realized he'd been flirting with a cyborg. He would want nothing more to do with her. He wouldn't want to hear her excuses. She would be forced to stumble after him, to tell him the reason she'd come, feeling like the disgrace she was. Someone cleared his throat, and Cinder jumped out of her growing anxiety, nearly twisting her ankle. One of the servants had evidently gotten tired of standing motionless and impartial, and was now looking her over with barely veiled revulsion.
"I beg your pardon," he said, with a tightness to his voice. "I must scan your ID."
Cinder instinctively pulled her hand away from him, pressing her wrist against her stomach.
"Why?"
His eyes darted to the row of guards, ready to call on them to have her escorted out at any moment.
"To ensure you're on the guest list, of course," he said, holding up a small handheld scanner.
Cinder pressed her back into the pillar, nerves humming.
"But I thought every citizen in the city was invited."
"Indeed they are," the man grinned, looking almost gleeful at the prospect of disinviting the girl before him. "But we must ensure that we are receiving those who responded to their invitations. It's a security measure."
Gulping, Cinder glanced out toward the dance floor. Kai was still being hounded by Pearl, and now Cinder could see Audrey hovering not far off, looking primed to jump into the conversation should Pearl say anything to embarrass her. Pearl had not dropped her shy, flirtatious charm. She stood with one head bowed and one hand gingerly pressed against her collarbone. Kai still looked perplexed. Goosebumps racing up her arms, Cinder turned back to the courtier and attempted to channel Peony's cheerful innocence.
"Of course," she said.
Holding her breath, she stretched out her arm. She was concocting a number of excuses, justifications. Her RSVP must have gotten mixed up with someone else's, or perhaps there was confusion, as her stepmother and sister had already arrived without her, or...
"Ah!"
The man jolted, his eyes staring at the small screen. Cinder tensed, wondering what her chances were of knocking him out with a quick blow to the head, without any of those guards noticing. His bewildered eyes took another turn over her dress, her hair, and then returned to his screen. She could see the internal struggle as his smile slowly turned up, attempting politeness.
"Why, Lin Mei, what a pleasure. We are so glad you could join us tonight."
Her eyebrows shot up.
"You are?"
The man gave her a stiff bow.
"Please forgive my ignorance. I'm sure His Imperial Majesty will be glad you've arrived. Please, step this way, and I will have you announced."
She blinked, dumbly following his arm as he stepped toward the stairs.
"Have me what?"
He tapped something into his port screen, before glancing back at Cinder. His gaze swooped over her again, as if he couldn't believe what he was about to do, but his polite smile didn't fade.
"All personal guests of His Imperial Majesty are duly announced, as recognition of their import. Of course, they don't usually arrive so... late." "Wait, personal guests of... oh. Oh, no, you don't have to..."
She was silenced by the blare of recorded trumpets through invisible overhead speakers. She ducked at the sound, eyes widening, as the short melody faded. At the last trill of the horns, a majestic voice boomed through the ballroom.
"Please welcome to the 126th Annual Ball of the Eastern Commonwealth, a personal guest of His Imperial Majesty, Lin Cinder of New Beijing."
Chapter 34. The ballroom temperature spiked as hundreds of faces turned toward Cinder. Perhaps the crowd would have turned away a moment later, indifferent, if they hadn't found the Emperor's personal guest to be a girl with damp hair and mud splatters on the hem of her wrinkled silver dress. As it was, the gazes halted, pinning Cinder to the top of the stairs, her mismatched feet stuck to the landing as if concrete had hardened around them. She looked at Kai, his jaw hanging as he took her in. He'd expected her to come the entire time. He'd reserved a spot for her as his personal guest. She could only imagine how he was regretting that decision now. Beside him, Pearl's face had begun to burn beneath the glowing chandeliers. Cinder looked at her stepsister, at Audrey, took in their speechless mortification, and reminded herself to breathe. It was already over for her.
Pearl had almost certainly told Kai that she was Cyborg. Soon, Queen Lavanna would see her too, and know she was Lunar. She would be taken, maybe killed. There was nothing she could do about it now. But she had taken the risk. She had made the decision to come. It would not go to waste. She squared her shoulders, lifted her chin. Gathering up the full silk skirt, she fixed her gaze on Kai and made her way slowly down the steps. His eyes softened into something almost like amusement, as if such a ragged appearance was all one could expect from a renowned mechanic. A murmur rippled through the crowd, and as the heel of Cinder's boot hit the marble floor with forced precision, the sea of gowns began to shuffle aside. Women whispered behind their hands, men craned their necks to catch the hushed gossip. Even the servants had stopped to watch her, holding trays of delicacies aloft. The scent of garlic and ginger clouded around them, twisting Cinder's stomach into knots. She realized suddenly how famished she was. All the preparations for running away had left little time for eating. Coupled with her anxiety, it almost made her feel faint. She did her best to ignore it, to be strong, but nervousness was expanding through her taut muscles with every step. Her pulse was a drumbeat inside her head. Every eye swept over her, mocking her. Every head turned to whisper, rumors already taking flight. Cinder's ears rang, picking snatches of conversation. A personal guest? But who is she? And what is that stuff on her dress? Until Cinder adjusted the audio interface, silencing the words. Never in her life had she been so glad she could not blush. Kai's lips twitched, and though he still looked baffled, he did not look angry or disgusted. Cinder gulped. As she got nearer, her arms burned to wrap around herself, to cover her filthy, wrinkled, water-stained dress as best she could. But she didn't allow them. It would have been futile, and Kai didn't care about her dress. If anything, he was probably trying to discern how much of her was metal and silicon. She kept her head high, even as her eyes stung, even as panic filled her vision with warnings and precautions. It was not her fault he had liked her. It was not her fault she was Cyborg. She would not apologize. She focused only on walking, one thudding step after another, as the crowd parted before her, then closed again in her wake. But before she reached the Emperor, a figure pushed out of the crowd and into her path. Cinder froze, halted by the seething glare of her stepmother. She blinked, dumbfounded, as reality stumbled in on the still, silent moment. She'd forgotten that Audrey and Pearl were there. Blotchy, red cheeks showed through Audrey's translucent white makeup, and her chest was heaving beneath the modest neckline of her kimono. The confused, tittering hushed, pushing the questions toward those in the back of the crowd, who couldn't see what was happening, but could no doubt feel the tension expanding around them. Audrey's hand snatched forward, capturing Cinder's skirt in her fist. She shook the material. "Where did you get this?" she hissed, her voice low as if she were afraid of causing more of a scene than Cinder already had. Setting her jaw, Cinder stepped back, whipping the dress away from her stepmother. "Iko saved the dress. Peony would have wanted me to have it." Behind her mother, Pearl gasped, her hands flying to her mouth. Cinder glanced at her and found Pearl looking down at her feet with horror. Cinder shuddered, imagining her cyborg leg visible for all to see, until Pearl pointed at her feet and shrieked,
"My boots! Those are my boots! On her!"
Audrey's eyes narrowed.
"You little thief! How dare you come here and make a mockery of this family?" She jutted her finger over Cinder's shoulder toward the grand staircase. "I command you to go home this instant before you embarrass me further." "No," she said, clenching her fists. "I have as much right to be here as you do."
"What?
You?"
Audrey's voice started to rise.
"But you're nothing but a..."
She caught her tongue, even now unwilling to share the mortifying secret about her stepdaughter. Instead, she raised her hand over her shoulder, palm flat.
The crowd gasped and Cinder flinched, but the strike did not come. Kai stood beside her stepmother, one hand firmly wrapped around Audrey's wrist. Audrey turned to him, her face burning with anger, but the look quickly fell away. She shriveled back, stammering.
Your Majesty!
That is enough, he said, his voice gentle but stern, and released her. Audrey shrank into a pathetic curtsy, head bobbing.
I am so sorry, Your Majesty. My emotions, my temper, this girl is... I am sorry she has interrupted. She is my ward. She should not be here.
Of course she should. There was a lightness to his words, as if he believed his presence alone could dissolve Audrey's hostility. He fixed his gaze on Cinder. She is my personal guest. He glanced around over the heads of the shocked audience, toward the stage where the symphony had gone silent. This is a night for celebration and amusement, he said loudly. Please let the dancing resume. The band started, shakily at first, until music again filled the ballroom. Cinder could not recall when it had died out, but her hearing was still dulled to the swarming noise around her. Kai was looking at her again. She gulped and found that she was shaking, with anger and terror and nerves and the sensation of being captured by his brown eyes. Her mind was blank, not sure if she wanted to thank him or turn away and keep yelling at her stepmother. But he didn't give her a chance to do either. Kai reached forward and took her hand, and before she realized what was happening, he had plucked her away from her stepmother and stepsister and taken her into his arms. They were dancing. Heart hammering, Cinder pried her gaze away from him and looked over his shoulder. They were the only ones dancing. Kai must have noticed it too, for he floated his hand briefly away from her waist, gesturing to the gawking crowd, and said in a tone that was part encouragement, part command, "Please, you are my guests. Enjoy the music." Awkwardly, those nearby traded glances with their own partners, and soon the floor was filling with bustled skirts and coattails. Cinder risked glancing toward where they had abandoned Audrey and Pearl. They were both standing still amid the shuffling crowd, watching as Kai expertly guided Cinder farther and farther away from them. Clearing his throat, Kai murmured, "You have no idea how to dance, do you?" Cinder fixed her gaze on him, mind still reeling. "I'm a mechanic." His eyebrows raised mockingly. "Believe me, I noticed. Are those grease stains on the gloves I gave you?" Mortified, she glanced at their intertwined fingers and the black smudges on the white silk gloves. Before she could apologize, she felt herself being gently pushed away and spun beneath his arm. She gasped, for a moment feeling light as a butterfly, before she stumbled on her undersized cyborg foot and fell back into his embrace. Kai grinned, coaxing her back to arm's length, but he didn't tease her. "So, that's your stepmother. Legal guardian. Right, my mistake. She seems like a real treasure." Cinder scoffed, and her body started to ease. Without sensation in her foot, it felt like trying to dance with a ball of iron soldered to her ankle. Her leg was beginning to ache from carrying it, but she resisted the urge to limp, picturing ever-graceful Pearl in her ball gown and heels, and wished her body into conformity. At least her body seemed to be memorizing the pattern of the dance steps, making each movement slightly more fluid than the last, until she almost felt as if she knew what she were doing. Of course, the tender pressure of Kai's hand on her waist didn't hurt. "I'm sorry about that," she said. "About her and my stepsister. Can you believe they think I'm the embarrassment?" She made it sound like a joke, but she couldn't help analyzing his response, bracing for that moment when he asked her if it were true. If she really were cyborg. Then, as his smile started to crumble, she realized the moment had come far too soon, and she desperately wished she could take the comment back. She wished they could go on pretending forever that her secret was still safe, that he still did not know. That he still wanted her to be his personal guest. "Why didn't you tell me?" Kai said, his voice lowering even though the noise of laughter and tapping heels had filled the air around them. Cinder opened her mouth, but her words snagged in her throat. She wanted to refute Pearl's claim, to call her a liar. But what would that get her? More lies, more betrayal. The fingers of her metal hand tightened on his shoulder, the hard, unforgiving confines of the limb. He didn't flinch, just waited. She wanted to feel relief now that they had no more secrets. But that wasn't entirely true, either. He still didn't know she was lunar. She opened her mouth again, unsure what she was going to say, until the faint words came to her. I didn't know how. Kai's eyes softened, little wrinkles forming in their corners. I would have understood, he said. Almost imperceptibly, he inched closer, and Cinder found her elbow crawling up his shoulder in a way that felt impossibly natural. Still, he did not back away, did not shudder or tense. He knew, but he wasn't disgusted. He would still touch her. Somehow, unbelievably, he still even, maybe, liked her? She felt she would have cried if it had been an option. Her fingertips tentatively curled around the hair at the back of his neck, and she found that she was shaking, sure he would push her away at any moment. But he didn't. He did not pull away, did not grimace. His lips parted, just barely, and Cinder wondered if maybe she wasn't the only one having trouble breathing. It's just, she started, running her tongue across her lips. It isn't something I like to talk about. I haven't told anyone who didn't know her. Cinder's words evaporated. Her? Fingers stiffening, she eased them out of his hair and settled her palm back on his shoulder. The intensity in his gaze melted into sympathy. I understand why you didn't say anything. But now I feel so selfish. His jaw flexed, his brow turned up with guilt. I know I should have guessed after you told me she was sick to begin with, but with the coronation and Queen Lavanna's visit and the ball, I guess I forgot. I know that makes me the biggest jerk in the world, and I should have realized that your sister had... and why you were ignoring my comms. It makes sense now. He drew her closer, until she could almost lay her head on his shoulder. But she didn't. Her body had gone rigid again, the dance steps forgotten. I just wish you would have told me. Her gaze shifted over his shoulder, focusing on nothing. I know, she murmured. I should have told you. She felt as though all her synthetic parts were squeezing together, crushing her inside. Kai didn't know. And yet, to have felt the comforting presence of acceptance, only to be confined by secrecy again, was even more unbearable than lying to him to begin with. Kai, she said, shaking herself from the misery that threatened her. She pushed back to arm's length, returning them to the acceptable distance of strangers, or of a mechanic dancing with her emperor. For the first time, Kai missed a dance step, eyes blinking in surprise. She ignored the guilt scratching at her throat. I came here to tell you something. It's important, she glanced around, ensuring that no one could hear them. Though she caught a few jealous scowls targeting her, no one was close enough to hear over the music, and the Lunar Queen was nowhere to be seen. Listen, you can't marry Lavanna, no matter what she wants, no matter what she threatens. Kai flushed at the Queen's name. What do you mean? She doesn't just want the Commonwealth. She's going to start a war with Earth, either way. It's just that being Empress here will pave the way for her. It was his turn to look around, simultaneously molding his look of panic into cool indifference, though up close, Cinder could see the worry in his eyes. And there's more. She does know about Nancy, about what Nancy found out. She knows you were trying to find Princess Selene, and she's taken the information you found and is hunting her down now. She has people out looking for her, if they haven't found her already. Eyes widening, Kai looked back at her. And you know, she continued, not allowing him to interrupt, you know that she won't forgive you for trying to find the princess. She gulped. Kai, as soon as you marry her, and she has what she wants,
She's going to kill you. The color drained from his face. How do you know all this? She took in a deep breath, somehow exhausted from getting all the information out, as if she'd only reserved enough energy to bring her to this moment. The DCOM chip I found in Nancy. There was this girl, its programmer. It's complicated. She hesitated, thinking she should give the chip to Kai while she had the chance. He may be able to get more information out of the girl, except in her hurry to leave for the ball, she'd stashed it in her calf compartment. Her gut sank. To retrieve it now would be to reveal herself to Kai, and everyone around her. She gulped, shoving aside the rising distress. Was saving her own pride more important to her? Is there somewhere we can go? She asked. Away from the crowd? I'll tell you everything. He glanced around. In their dancing, they had traveled almost the entire length of the ballroom, and now they stood before a set of massive doors that opened out onto the royal gardens. Beyond the steps, a willow tree was weeping from the heavy rain, a koi pond nearly overflowing. The pummeling of the storm came in waves, almost drowning out the noise of the orchestra. "The gardens?" he said, but before he could move, a shadow fell across them. Glancing up, Cinder saw the unhappy expression of a royal official, looking at Kai with lips so tight they started to go white. He did not acknowledge Cinder.
"Your Majesty," he said, his face drawn. "It is time."
Chapter 35 Cinder looked up at the man, her link to the net database informing her that he was Khan Torin, royal advisor. "Time?" she said, turning back to Kai. "Time for what?" Kai stared at her, part apologetic, part afraid. Her gut twisted. "Time to seal the fate of the Eastern Commonwealth."
"No," she hissed. "Kai, you can't!"